The Defense Department takes a new look at the best way to secure cloud computing services the Pentagon gets from the private sector. A new report by the DoD Chief Information Officer highlights potential changes to the security levels required for commercial cloud services. In the latest edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller writes about DoD's 45-day cloud computing study, and he's here now to talk about the Pentagon's plan. What changes will this plan propose for the private sector cloud vendors the Pentagon deals with, Jason?
I think that's the key here. It's private sector only. So the commercial cloud, however you define commercial, it's not for the DoD-only cloud. So yes. I think that's important to note in the beginning. But the changes actually are very interesting in many respects. First of all, it's differentiating between national security and non-national security systems. Now, one might say, well, what's a non-national security system? Because isn't everything DoD does national security? And I think the fact is, they're looking at, let's say, a business system that holds payroll records or maybe a time and attendance system. That's maybe considered non-national security versus a system that holds intelligence of where all the bad guys are in the world, as one example. So that's the first thing. The second thing it does, it looks at what they call FISMA impact levels 1 and 2. So these are the lowest levels. So FISMA impact 1 says if you lost the data, it's not that big of a deal. It's already public data. FISMA impact level 2 says it's mostly public data, maybe some private data, but if you lost it, it's not that big of a deal as well. It's bigger than 1, but not as bad as 3, 4, and 5, and 6. So it lowers the levels and says, let's bring these closer to what's already being required for cloud security under the FedRAMP, the Federal Risk Authorization Management Program that's being run government-wide that DoD is a major part of. So that's one of the major changes. The second major change is around the idea of impact levels 3, 4, 5, and 6, specifically, again, looking at them and say, how can we ensure that these aren't so arduous for vendors, for the commercial vendors to meet, yet still have the rigor needed to secure personal identifiable information?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the really big ones when it comes to security. Again, this is all laid out. We have a link to that study on federalnewsradio.com.
So what are the changes that Terry Halverson's proposing here in this?
I think the biggest major change that's coming from this is actually the addition of a new category called mission critical systems. And this is where the risk-based decision comes in. What DoD has got to do, and what DoD is telling the military services and agencies to do, is to say, you may have a system that's low impact, meaning level 1 or 2, but you say to our mission, this is a high impact. So if this system goes down, it hurts our mission. So even though the data in it is categorized in one way, the mission criticality of it is categorized a different way. And that is a different way to look at these missions, these systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the biggest change that we see here. Now, it's interesting that they are lowering the number of security requirements for cloud service providers around what they call, national security systems, but the fact is the mission category.
So my fear there is that we'll see a system creep where, oh, this is important. This is critical to our mission. So this has to be high. Well, this one is too. And this one, and by the time you're finished, everything's critical to the mission. And they're as good as the intentions are of what Terry Halverson's trying to get at here. And I don't mean to cast aspersions on the motivations of the people at the branches either, but by the time we're done with it, everything's critical and we haven't really been able to gain any ground.
Well, I think part of the problem is these blanket agreements around FISMA, is it 1, is it 2, is it 3, is it 4? You already had some of that. So people realize what it takes to protect their systems. And I think what Halverson and his fellow colleagues at the DoD CIO office is trying to look at is there's different risk factors that you can accept. And if this is a system that is, let's say, as you said, if it goes down, can the warfighting mission continue?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes, then it's not mission critical. So I think that there'll be some more, at least oversight or discussion about it. And they want, and this also, I think, goes back to the bigger trend that we're seeing of the risk management trend, not just from a cybersecurity, but from a decision-making perspective across not just the DoD, but I think all of government.
Okay, so a report is great. What are the steps to turn this into actual action?
Well, actually, the report details 20 new policy or regulatory changes. So I only highlighted about 5 of them. So let me just go through a couple of them that I thought were interesting. One is the DoD CIO is going to update its data center memo to recognize the approved services as appropriate destinations in addition to the core data centers. Now, these core data centers many times are either at DISA, the DISA DEX, we hear that commonly referred to, or now we have the the changes that are coming through the JIE and the data centers that fall underneath that program. The DoD CIO will also issue a policy allowing low impact, what they call PII, again, personal identifiable information. They give an example such as business card information to be maintained at level two cloud services. Currently, even low impact personally identifiable information is classified as CUI, unclassified but still sensitive data. So that's a change there as well. There'll be other memos coming from the DoD CIO, including reflect the change in level three data and new cloud hosting options, a new memo reminding people about risk assessment on their development and test systems. And I think this is very interesting, too, because what the DoD CIO is going to say is dev and test environments are typically 5 to 15 times larger than production environments. So migrating these to a commercial cloud service provider could mean millions and millions of dollars of savings. One last one around the acquisition of commercial cloud services. A new memo guidance is coming as well for contracting officers and acquisition professionals. One last bit about this. All of this, Francis, is kind of ahead of a big policy that's coming from the DoD acting CIO, Terry Halvorsen. So I think knowing the steps that you're seeing here is really a big precursor to that new policy.
Is that new policy why this report happened in the first place, or where did this come from? What was the motivation
here? I think the policy is attached to the report in a sense, but it's not one for the other. I think when Terry Halvorsen became the acting DoD CIO, his experience from the Navy CIO said, you know, this cloud policy generally, the current one, maybe isn't working as well. Everything was supposed to go to DISA, the Defense Information Systems Agency, as the cloud broker. Maybe that concept is not just won't suit the service as well. Maybe we need to rethink this. And I think that's part of the reason. And then the other piece is I think the vendors had a hard time being commercial service providers meeting the DoD requirements. And I think the vendors are saying, wait a minute, we're already meeting FedRAMP requirements. Mm-hmm. Now you want us to go above and beyond FedRAMP, but you agree in some ways that FedRAMP is okay for low and moderate. Again, levels one, two, maybe three in their lexicon.
I can understand that to a degree, but one of the things that we heard on this program and that you heard from talking to Dave McClure and Kathy Conrad about FedRAMP as they stood it up, and that we've heard any number of different places, is that FedRAMP was always intended as a floor, not a ceiling. This is the minimum standard by which any federal agency should be buying cloud services. And then if you want to add additional layers of security or requirements onto it, you can do that.
And what I'm finding is talking to people like Matt Goodrich, who now is the acting program director at FedRAMP, is that a lot of agencies are not adding additional requirements. I mean, if you think about it, they're already going through a pretty rigorous process of approval from the Homeland Security Department, of approval from DOD, approval from GSA, plus they are overlapped with the NIST guidance, the 853 guidance. So people are saying, if this seems pretty good. And what the vendors were telling DOD was, we can meet that, but the cost is a lot, and it's a tough road to meet you, and it's going to take a while. And DOD, I think, was saying, well, do we really want to go down this long road when we need the cloud services sooner than later?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if there's, you know, I think a secondary one here, Francis, is I'm not sure people are see the savings or the cost savings from DISA yet. I think there's some discussion around that, too.
Well, and you mentioned something there. You talk about, do we want to go down that long road? And something that maybe is encouraging in between the lines there, I'm not implying that you said it, but I'm hearing it through the actions that are going on here, is maybe they're willing to take, in this case at least, the 85% solution that's already available to them, instead of having to have that last mile of security that's every single requirement that we've asked for and we have to pay X plus 50% for it. We're going to be willing to pay X and be satisfied with what's available through FedRAMP and maybe with an added layer or two.
Right. Now, I think you're right in the sense that they're looking at the risks and say, can we accept the risk?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're, the 85%.
Yeah, that's right.
Versus waiting for that 100% solution. And I think that the way agencies are moving to cloud so quickly, and cloud is going throughout the private sector world too, I think DoD recognizes they need to keep up.
Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller going inside the reporter's notebook, and you also write in your column on federalnewsradio.com about some personnel changes at OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy at the White House. Comings and goings, or comings or goings, or what's happening there?
I think it's all goings, unfortunately. Now, some of goings are goings inside the government, at least, so they're moving from one agency to another. I think the biggest move is Nick Sinai, the Deputy Chief Technology Officer from the White House, OSTP, is moving to Harvard, and in fact, he's going to team up with former CTO Anish Chirac. Chopra, and they're going to work on what they call basically data and open data research. They are the inaugural recipients of the Walter Shorenstein Media and Democracy Fellowship.
Wow.
So this
that
is pretty cool.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, this is a new, again, fellowship brought on by Harvard. And what they're going to do together, basically, is it's a six-month residency. And he's going to speak and write about data as a public infrastructure and investigate media policy, economic implications of providing greater public access to government data. This basically, they're taking the open data policy that the Obama administration has done and doing some research to see the impact.
He's got the right guy there, because if there's anybody in America that likes to talk about data, it's Anish Chopra.
I think he likes to talk.
Well,
I mean, who doesn't, right?
Well,
we're on the radio.
Right. I mean, I do it for a living. There so you there go. You have that.
Two other folks leading. One is Lynn Overman. Now, she spent the last 2.5 years working within the White House as an advisor positions, including the last year as a senior advisor to the CTO. And she's actually going to join the Commerce Department, or she has joined the Commerce Department, as the Deputy Chief Data Officer.
Okay.
Now, what's fascinating about this is we did an interview about a month and a half ago with Mark Domes, the Undersecretary of Commerce, and he said, you know, one of the goals of Secretary Penny Pritzker is to hire a chief data officer. So she's going to be the number two, this Lynn Overman.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still waiting for the announcement of the number one chief data officer.
Yes.
And then finally, the last one is Charles Worthington, and he's the moving from OSTP to OMB, and he's going to work in the Digital Services Office. And he basically was a Presidential Innovation Fellow, and now is going to kind of take those skills and help the government on a full-time basis.